I wanted to welcome you all and welcome our wonderful guest. This is His Holiness Bhakti Vikash Swami Maharaj. Actually, he was born in Hemel Hempstead. And at the age of 17, I guess some of you coming to university are very near to that age. And I was a student here myself in 1975 at the medical school, me and my husband. He's Dr. Paul Oliver. I'm Dr. Hina Patel, and we also have spiritual names. My name is Harvey Rishonasi, his name is Pundarik Das. Maharaj went at the age of 17 into this knowledge.
At age 18, actually.
At 18.
In 1975.
1975. When I came to this university, he was going into this knowledge of the real us. Who are we? Where do, you know, so it's a very important question. So today, we keep coming back to this wonderful campus, and thank you very much to Mekula. I hope that Sahil is getting much better, the president of this KCSOC. But tonight, I know she's invited very wide audiences, and we are both GPs, we are doctors, we trained at the medical school, so the science is a very important part. And what Maharaj will speak about is actually the real science, and I'm sure he will tell you how and why. So Maharaj,
get started.
Maybe later on.
So you're mostly all science students, is it? Is this predominantly in the science university?
No, it's a full university.
All disciplines, okay, all right. So I was asked to speak on what is Krishna consciousness. Probably most of you have very little idea who or what Krishna is. Maybe some of you have some idea. And you all know the word consciousness. But I wonder how much we actually know what consciousness is. Consciousness, according to the Vedic understanding that we subscribe to and we accept as reality, consciousness is who we are. Cognito ergo sum. That because we are conscious, we are. We are consciousness. That is the intrinsic factor of who we are. It's not the body. If I cut a finger off, or a hand off, or an arm off, I can still be existing. But you know, we may say, well, if we cut the head off, then we cease to exist. But the brain, it's understood, it's not exactly the seat of consciousness. It's something like the hardware which runs the program. And consciousness is something separate. Actually, there have been many studies done which have shown that consciousness is separate from the body, although these studies tend not to be accepted by the scientific orthodoxy because it's too revolutionary. Then the whole evolutionary theory goes out. But that the living being, the soul, is a different entity to the body. This is the first and basic understanding of Krishna consciousness, to understand what is consciousness. What in English is called the soul means the conscious living being, which is separate from the body. The body will die. The person will continue to exist. Before this body began, I existed, you existed. So that's the first basic understanding. And like I say, there have been many studies, there are many cases of children who remember their previous existence. They remember in a different country, or people can be hypnotized and all this and that. But anyway, this is the first point to understand, that we are consciousness. The body is temporary, but we are conscious living beings who continue to exist after the dissolution, the inevitable dissolution of the body. So consciousness, that is generally understood to be an awareness. If we say we're conscious of something, it means we're aware of something. So the general principle of consciousness is awareness. This table doesn't have consciousness, obviously. The table is made of chemicals. This body is made of chemicals. But an intrinsic difference between the table and the body is that connected with this body is consciousness, awareness. However much you bang the table or smash it, the table doesn't have any feelings. Consciousness means there's awareness, and along with awareness, there is desire. That is an intrinsic factor that goes along with consciousness. All living beings are conscious. Even the trees, they have at a very basic level some consciousness. So all conscious living beings, they always act, they always aspire for a situation in which they will be happy. In the tree, that is represented as growing toward the light. We, as humans, as being more developed in consciousness, we have very complex kind of life, but basically everything we do for the sake of attaining happiness and avoiding distress. Desire is concomitant with consciousness. We all have desires, is it not? We all have desires. And those desires we can distill into desires for happiness and for avoiding distress. So this is the nature of consciousness. It is consciousness is the symptom of every living being. And we all desire happiness. Now, there's a lot of problem with that, because however much we try, and we do try, and everything we do, all our efforts are aimed at happiness, that may not be completely selfish. It may be, we may also act for the happiness of others, or the distress of others. But a big problem with that is that the very nature of this world is that it produces distress. We don't want to, for instance, die, but we can't avoid it. We don't want to get sick, but we can't avoid it. So in this world, we are faced with the situation that we endeavor for happiness, but we cannot get full happiness. We cannot get unending happiness, and we have to accept much distress. So there's a little overview of consciousness and the ramifications of being conscious, and we can't avoid that. We are, as conscious living beings, we have desires, we always desire happiness, but we're in a situation where we cannot avoid distress. This is an unnatural position. Although we take it for granted that I am this body, it's actually an unnatural position, because our natural position is to be fully happy. But life in the material world means that we cannot but accept distress. So Krishna is another word, Krishna, consciousness. Krishna, to put it simplistically, is that person who is somewhat but not very well represented by the English word God. Krishna consciousness is to be conscious of that person. By being conscious of whom, we will always be happy in the fullest possible way. Which, in the present state of consciousness, we cannot even imagine. Most people, their consciousness Friday night means let's go out and have a good time. So it seems that your consciousness is a little more refined than that, at least at 6 o'clock in the evening. Is that you're interested in some higher consciousness than that? So thank you for that. So everyone wants to be happy, and ultimate happiness is love. And love means sharing with others, interaction with others, in a selfless way, in a happy way. And Krishna is that person with whom we all have an latent, pure relationship of love with. And by interacting with whom, we can all be fully happy eternally. So Krishna means God. God means the supreme controller. There are many theories in the world today, not just today, it's nothing new, to say that there is no controller, just everything came into being by chance, and we're all here by chance, and eat, sleep, drink, be merry, and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead, and then it's all over, it's all finished. But if we understand that we are consciousness, and consciousness is a different kind of entity, different kind of energy to matter. Matter is always destroyed, but spiritual energy is never destroyed. As living spiritual beings, we eternally exist, and our eternal hankering, our ultimate desire, is to love and be loved. And Krishna is that person who is the supreme controller. But he's not a control freak. He controls in a benevolent way, and he wants that we all be happy. So that happiness is possible in a relationship with him. And Krishna consciousness means to develop our natural, but at present dormant or forgotten, loving relationship with Krishna. Why are we in this material world at all? Why are we in this position of suffering? Because we're meant to love. That is our natural propensity, to love. When we don't want to enter into that relationship with Krishna, then we come to this material world. Love means voluntary. I can put a gun at your head and say, love me. And you might say, yes, I love you, but it would be a forced love, not real love. Real love means voluntarily. So we all have the choice to live with Krishna, love Krishna, or not to do so. And if we don't want to do that, then our consciousness becomes very restricted, becomes centered on ourselves. That's called egoism, when we're just interested in ourselves. And then instead of loving Krishna, we just try to enjoy through the body and the mind. And we become covered with so much ignorance that we forget that we're eternal. So Krishna consciousness means to reawaken our natural loving propensity, which is centered in Krishna. And if we love Krishna, then naturally we can love everyone, not in a superficial or sentimental or hypocritical way, but in a very real way. So that's it in brief. That's the theory of what Krishna consciousness is, that we are eternal spiritual beings. Krishna is the supreme spiritual being, and Krishna consciousness means to be aware of Krishna. And if we are aware of Krishna, then that awareness is naturally a loving relationship. So loving Krishna, that can be awakened or reawakened in our consciousness by taking up activities of Krishna consciousness, especially chanting and singing the names of Krishna, discussing about Krishna, understanding philosophically who we are, what is our original consciousness, why our consciousness at the present time is not centered on Krishna. So it's necessary to understand that also philosophically, because our tendency in the material world is to build worldviews based on how we can be happy in this world, which is a mistake, because we can't be happy in this world on the terms of this world, because the terms of this world are repeated birth and death. So to try to be happy in a place where we have to suffer is not a very good proposition. So that's it very briefly and simply. Krishna consciousness means to understand we are conscious by nature. We are different from matter. We are different from the matter that constitutes this body. Just to give an example of that, when someone dies, we say he has gone away or she has gone away in every language of the world, whatever it may be. Everyone says it's just understood, whatever language. How do you say that in Gujarati? Gone away. Someone died. I can say in English, he's gone away. In Hindi, chalega. In Bengali, chalega. Gujarati? Chalega. Any other languages? Sindhi? Halivir. Completely different. Any other languages we have here? Speakers of other languages? Anyone? No, any language. Now we just said English, Gujarati, Sindhi, Bengali, and Hindi. These are all Indian languages apart from English. Italiano. Andato means when someone dies, you say? They've gone. You see, I don't know Italian, but this is theory proved. Anyone else from any other language area? Telugu? You know Telugu also. Elipondu. Elipoyandu. Yourself? Satupeta. Which language is that? Kannada? Tamil. I see. So, who went where? What went? But the body will be lying there. What went? Actually, just this simple example shows that intuitively we all understand that we're not the body. Who are we? We are consciousness. We are meant for eternal, happy life. That is possible with Krishna. Okay, well, that was short. And there's a lot more to say, but there's a brief introduction. Krishna consciousness is the art and the science of knowing who we are and how we can be actually happy. So, any question about that, please? I know it's a lot all at once. I mean, after many, many lifetimes of thinking differently, all of a sudden, to think, well, I'm not the body. I'm eternal. I have an eternal relationship with Krishna. I know it's a lot to accept all at once, but just the idea is there. You can start to think about it. Yes, please. Yes, yeah. The first thing to understand is that we're not the body. And when we understand that, our consciousness changes. Our whole attitude to life should change. We can see that culturally, the whole outlook of societies that are based on the understanding that we are born again, it forms a very different culture to those that believe that, as in the Western world for the last 2,000 years or so, the understanding has been that this life is all in all. Either from the Christian perspective, this life is all in all, you get judged, and it's either you get it right and you're saved, or you get it wrong and you're doomed. Or the atheistic or humanistic outlook, then it's just all finished. You live and then you die and then it's all finished. So culturally, it's going to make a difference, although practically we see that most people, even in cultures that give lip service to the understanding of a future life, most people are not very serious about preparing for it because they're wrapped up in the matters of the present. But when we do understand that this life is like a crossroads, and what we can choose to go, well, not, it's a multidimensional crossroads, because we can either go up, but we have to make a conscious decision to do so. Or if we don't make a conscious decision, we're likely to go down. Or we may go sideways. But to go up means, yes, there's a progression. And it means realization. First of all, if we accept, at least theoretically, that the body is temporary but I am eternal, we have to start acting our life on that basis, and acting with the understanding that everything I do in this life, that will influence my future, not only in this life, but in the eternality also. And that I have the opportunity in human life, because we're not only born in human bodies, but I have the opportunity in human life to act in such a way that my consciousness becomes freed from all material attachments, and then I can get freed from the cycle of birth and death. So to change our consciousness from being thinking that this life is all in all, and change it to think that I have to act in this life so that I don't get born again, it's a big change of consciousness, just to theoretically accept that. Then we have to start to act in that way. So someone who has this consciousness, he tries to understand, or is beginning to imbibe this consciousness, he has to understand what is favorable for his eternal benefit and what isn't. So certain things are going to pollute our consciousness and keep us within the material world. For instance, eating meat is not beneficial for purifying the consciousness. And it also unnecessarily inflicts suffering on other living beings. So someone who's interested in purifying their consciousness and coming to Krishna consciousness, one of the first things they'd want to do is to stop eating meat. So your life would change if you're eating meat. And in many ways, just like I said, that Friday night means people want to go out and have what they call a good time, although I often wondered what kind of a good time is it running around the streets yelling and urinating in the pavement sometimes and screaming out and waking up the next morning with a headache. But unfortunately, people who don't have higher consciousness, they think this is something enjoyable. So acting to purify a consciousness, and if the process works, which it should do, then definitely we should have realizations, and we'll want to go further. And there is a process of purification, and there are technical terms for this. There's ado shraddha, means in the beginning we have some basic faith that, well, maybe there's something here. And then the next stage is called sadhu sangha, which means that we like to mix with people who are on this path, who can help us to progress on this path. As the saying goes, you know a man by his company. So if we're interested in self-realization, then we'll want to mix with people who are on that path and who can help us and guide us. Then the next stage is that we seriously take up all the various practices. And then what happens is that actually it should start to work. And that means that all the bad manifestations of our consciousness, they start to decrease. So the manifestations of our consciousness, which bind us in this material world, there are many of them. The six main ones are called, I'll just say in English, yeah, if we give the Sanskrit terms and we know what they mean, it gives a more precise understanding. But anyway, there's lust, which means a general or desire, a general state of wanting to enjoy the material world. Kam, krodha, anger. And we were just discussing some points of psychology. So my understanding of krodha, the Sanskrit term is krodha, which is almost always translated as anger, which is not incorrect, but I understand that includes also frustration. From desire comes anger, but it's not always expressed as overt anger. Maybe you could say better, being trained in all these things, but I would say that frustration is internal anger, or anger, overtly expressed anger is in many cases an expression of frustration. So anyway, there's lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, and overall illusion. So when one takes to spiritual life, these should go down. There should be some improvement, isn't it? If we're talking about higher consciousness, there should be some improvement in the person's character. It should be visible. I had a lot of problems, actually. I was raised as a Catholic. Now, I'm not going to do Catholic bashing here, but I did have a problem when it was very clear to me in school, Catholic school, that the teachers who professed Catholicism and were trying to make me in that line also, I didn't say anything in their character to inspire me, because I saw they weren't any different in any way from others, that they also, and the priests also, chain-smoking priests, and I found that troublesome, that someone who speaks of a higher philosophy or a higher understanding, there's nothing to show for it in their life. So, yeah, there should be some progression. And there are more stages. There's a lot more after that. That's the beginning. Beginning to overcome these unfavorable traits, well, that should manifest as development of being fixed in spiritual consciousness, that one can actually see the world in a completely different way. That's the next stage. That we see the world, when we see it, we judge everything. How in this situation can I maximize my opportunities for happiness and minimize any possibility of distress? That's basically how we see everything. That's a simplification of how we see the world. Is there something I can get out of this? Is there something I should avoid? But when we're in Krishna consciousness, we see that everything is created by Krishna. Everything is under the control of Krishna. I'm meant to serve Krishna. And therefore, everything in the world, as much as Krishna allows me to do so, I should utilize that for the service of Krishna. So it's a change from an exploitive consciousness to a consciousness of loving service. Anything else?
What are your meditative practices?
Oh, very good. Yeah, well, it's a very easy meditation. There are various practices, but the easiest one and the most important one is simply to chant the names of Krishna. Either speaking, we have hidden under here some beads, so chanting, counting like that. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And there's singing also, so we can have a group session of that. of singing the names of Krishna, because Krishna's name is fully fully spiritual. His name is He Himself. What's your name? Tom. All right. So your parents gave you that name. They could have given you any other name. You got to have some name. But the name of Krishna is a little different, because Krishna is the name of Krishna is not different from Him. So when we say the name of Krishna, that's completely purifying. And it has an important meaning also. Krishna means who is all attractive in the best possible way. He has all the qualities to attract us. So the main meditation is singing the names of Krishna. There are others also. There is also thinking of Krishna, worshipping Krishna in a formal manner. The meditative processes, which are well known now in the West as coming from India, the yoga processes, that's part of yoga. Yoga is a broader term than meditation and exercises. It's much broader. The understanding of yoga that's given in the Bhagavad Gita, which is, you have a copy there? Bhagavad Gita, we do have a copy. Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is sometimes said to be like the Hindu Bible, which isn't a very accurate term, but I won't get into that now. It's that is a discussion of yoga. And in that discussion, there's very little discussion of exercise. There is discussion of meditation, but the point is, yoga means, the word means to link, just like the English word yoke, to join together. So it means linking our consciousness with this supreme consciousness. And there are various methods of doing that. The main methods are karma yoga, by offering all our work to God. Jnana yoga, trying to understand by the mental process, intellectual process. Bhakti yoga means the yoga of devotion. So the meditative process, that comes under dhyana yoga. Dhyana literally means meditation. The word zen comes out of that also, dhyana. So that is a process for meditation on God, but it's not recommended for the present age, which began 5,000 years ago. Previously, there were other ages in which people had different physical and mental abilities. Now, again, this goes very much against everything you've ever been taught in school on what is accepted unquestionably by most people as being a fact, that civilization just came into being a few what is it now? When I was at school, I think it was about 3,000 years. I think now they extended it back to 4,000 or 5,000 years. When I was at school, the first humans, intelligent humans, came into being about, it was only about 20,000 years ago. So I think it's been put back. Homo sapiens, what is it now? They're always pushing it back because they find more and more artifacts. Anyway, in previous ages, that's another big discussion. In previous ages, people used to live much longer. Their minds were much more peaceful. I think we can say, without discussing even previous ages, I think we can say that even one or two generations ago, society was less disturbed than it is. The world was less disturbed than it is, both socially and individually. So because in the present age, people's minds are very disturbed, so it's very difficult to perform this meditational yoga. So this yoga of singing the names of Krishna gives us all the results of the meditation which adept yogis used to do, and some still do. Everyone can do it without any previous qualification. So chanting Hare Krishna is the main meditation. We'll do that. And how are we doing for time? Any more questions? What do you say? Do we have to move on or what?
I think there's one more question.
Yeah. Ultimately, are we separate from Krishna? No. Ultimately, and even now, we're not separate from Krishna. But at the same time, we're not completely the same as Krishna. We don't become Krishna, but we are not separate. We're bonded by love. When two people become very close, we can say they're the same person, probably. Two peas out of one pod. So far I've been speaking about Krishna. He is the Supreme Being, and I thought I might get some protest for that, because in feminism, there's always the problem, why he? But actually, when we say he, Krishna is not it. He is a person. But Krishna means Radha Krishna. Radha is the feminine counterpart of Krishna. So it's actually he and she. But Krishna is more prominent in the world. But the relationship of Radha and Krishna is one of such intimate love that they are inseparable. And we all have that intimate relationship with Krishna. We don't become Krishna, because there is an idea that we become one with God, but we're not interested in that actually, because we're more interested in love. The idea that you can become God is not as attractive as loving God. If love is the highest principle, then why do you want to become God? Loving is more attractive than just trying to merge into someone's identity. Merge in the identity in the sense that the lover and the beloved, they cannot but live with each other, without each other, and they love each other so intensely that their whole existence is completely wrapped up in each other, but still they remain separate. So we don't become Krishna, but we become not separate from him by being inseparable. And actually, as I said, we are now also. We're not separated from, in one sense, we can't be separated from Krishna, but by our consciousness, we presume ourselves to be. Although we can't be separate from Krishna, because Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is in everything. Krishna sees everything, Krishna hears everything, Krishna knows everything. But by our consciousness, we are separate from Krishna. And chanting Hare Krishna repairs that relationship with Krishna. It's a natural, loving relationship. So we should sing Hare Krishna. Would you like to do that? Like to give it a try? No expense? Nothing to lose. Do we have a... What is this? Where is this? It's being
projected.
It's being projected. Can you put the Hare Krishna mantra up? Do you have something? I can put that up. Sorry for coming late again. Thank you for waiting. So we'll chant Hare Krishna for a few minutes. Then we're moving on to... another engagement.
Is that right? You're going to do you have a second part of the program with the students here? They've got some nice food.
I do. I was hoping that everyone would introduce themselves. Yeah. And once everyone's introduced themselves, then we can.
So we'll sing a little bit first. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then we're moving on. If anyone wants to come to another session, if you're really enlivened by it, which actually I think we should be, because what is there in this world? There's just struggle, and you struggle, you live, you die, and there's got to be more than that. Something's making someone happy. What's that? Not Google. That doesn't make people happy. Oh, you don't have it. You have to look it up on the look it up on Google. There you go. You can look it up. There it is in Devanagari script. All right, that's pretty easy, isn't it? Three words. Very simple. Hare means Radha. Krishna means Krishna. And Rama means Krishna also. It's another way of saying Krishna. So this is called the Maha Mantra. Mantra means, man means mind, tra means that which delivers. So mantra is that which delivers us from lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion, pride, and all the other nonsense things. And Maha means great. So this is the greatest of all the mantras. There is a system for singing it, which is, again, very simple. One person, in this case me, sings it first, and then you all sing along together, if you so wish. Why not? Do we have cartels, Mridanga? We're really not an organized religion, are we? Should be a little bit organized. All right.